Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to run out of the rest of my voice, so please be quiet. Ladies and gentlemen, okay, that's good. I'm going to turn this mic right over to Paul Shane, our new CEO, who's been with us since September 19th, and he's going to talk to us about something. What are you going to talk to us about, Paul? Oh, he went off again. See, he's always putting out fires.
No, I'm here.
Okay, here you go. This is the joke microphone. No.
Can you hear me though?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I will move away from the speakers. Okay, so I just want to talk to you about three aspects of leadership tonight, as it's the leadership dinner. The first one I want to talk about is kind of where I see the CCB going, my goals for leadership. I gotta get away from this, sorry.
Yeah,
I'm going to the other. What? What are you holding up?
What do you need?
Oh, it looked like you were on the sun.
Okay, is it better over here?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the three aspects that I really want to talk about is my goals for leadership of the CCB. I want to talk about kind of my personal philosophy of leadership. And then in anticipation of the board elections later, I kind of want to just put out there what I think would make some good board members. So, and, you know, it'll be a short speech. You guys can enjoy your dinner. And then if you have questions at the end, feel free to ask them. Okay, so some of you may know that I have my own consulting business called the Waterfall Development Group. And over time, I've kind of come up with a boilerplate that works for most nonprofit organizations. And really, it'll work for the CCB too. And if you were at the board meeting last night, you're probably familiar with the term high speed, low drag. So really, that's about creating a self-renewing organization that's sustainable and effective over the long term. So to do that, we need to plan logically and act strategically. So what I mean by that is there's a lot of nonprofits out there that spend a whole bunch of money and time on creating a strategic plan, and then that plan sits on a shelf for 7 years until the next strategic planning session and nothing's ever done with it. I actually, in my master's class, one of my classmates did a thesis on strategic planning and realized that essentially 30% of the people actually use the strategic plan that they spend a lot of money to create. So when I say plan logically, plan for today, but be able to act strategically if something changes with funding. If anyone here is associated with nonprofit organizations, you know from 2009 to 2012, a lot of organizations went out of business that didn't plan logically and act strategically. There was a lot of folks that had painted themselves into a corner so badly that when government funding went away overnight, they literally had no funding and no programming dollars and had to shut their doors. Some of them, being older than the CCB, had to close their doors overnight. So that's what I mean by we need to have a plan in place, but we also need to be able to respond to the current environment. So the next thing I want to talk about is responsive versus reactive leadership. So when you have a grassroots organization and there's so many different voices at the table, sometimes, and I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but sometimes organizations like that are a little slow in responding to situations and they tend to react to crisis as opposed to responding to opportunities. So I think that moving forward, we really need to become more responsive and less reactive in how we really look at management of every aspect of the CCB, and not me, the board of directors, the membership, everybody just really should take a fresh look at reactive versus responsiveness. So the next thing, and this goes to what I was just saying about being strategic. So the best nonprofit organizations are those organizations that are consistently aware of their environment by doing what I call an environmental scan on an ongoing basis. So that's knowing your collaborative partners, but also your competitive partners. That's knowing where the funding is going, what legislation's coming down, because we all know that when legislation comes down, funding follows. So being ahead of the ball game, and I refer to it a lot as seeing around corners. So being able to identify the trends in legislative affairs, but at the same time, the trends in funding, so you're ahead of your competition. And that takes a lot, but it takes a lot of time and effort, and I'm sure Jeff can tell you from government affairs that there's stuff that comes down every day. But it's one of those things that, I mean, we have to commit to as an organization. It's just, you know, it's more of a mindset than anything else. I hate to use the word thinking outside of the box because that's a very overused term, but it's really that, looking for unrealized opportunities. So one more thing is embracing and employing flexibility at all times. You guys are really good at this. I've seen it at this convention, I don't know, 500 times on everyone's aspect. Today, I come into lunch, Peter's trying to enjoy his lunch, and I'm like, hey, Peter, there's this and that, and he immediately gets up and runs out of the room to deal with a situation where he could have just finished his lunch and went and deal with a situation. But I've seen it with the volunteers, especially the Sacramento volunteers. For you folks, just to understand, they're supposed to be working shift work, so they have like the night off or the morning off, and they've all worked around the clock for this convention. So, you know, it's... I may have even woke one up this morning when I requested a meeting at 11 o'clock, and she was still sort of in bed, but she made it down there with a smile on her face. But just everything that I've seen, like all the volunteers, the committee chairs, the membership, you've all been very flexible and very patient with everything. And that's really, you have to be flexible at all times and just embrace the strengths. And I see you guys are so patient with us uneducated sighted folks. When it comes to knowing anything about how to guide someone, I mean, you know, we did do a sensitivity training, but these volunteers are sporadic and they come in for one shift and they're gone. And you guys are so gracious and just so patient with people, and you've left such a good impression. I can't tell you how many volunteers have stopped me in the hallway or as they were leaving and said, thank you for this opportunity. You've opened my eyes to a whole new world that I didn't even know existed. And I feel like that's what you've done for me in the last 6 months. I mean, there's certain people in this room, Judy and Jeff included, that know that I've asked some pretty stupid questions about some basic things that you only know by asking, right? So I'm going off on a tangent, but I just wanted to thank you guys for your patience and understanding and your willingness to educate us on things that I know that my Sacramento group at the back table feels the same way, because they've also told me the same thing. So now this is the most important part about self-renewing and sustainability for an organization. So leadership is one of those terms like outside of the box. It's always used, overused. No one really knows what it means. It means different things to different people. So what it means to me on an effective level is that you really have to commit to and practice shared leadership development and responsibilities across the organization and empower people to be leaders at all levels of the organization. I think that this organization could easily serve as a model for the nation on how to do that, because you do it every single day of your lives. But it just has to, you know, there's only so many leaders that have the experience to be leaders, and I just want to make an appeal to those leaders out there to mentor other people at the organization, to give them an opportunity. And if any of you have ever worked in a team environment, you know certain personalities rise to the top. I can tell you, when I was in my master's program, we had to work as a cohort, and my immediate indication all the time was to be the leader, because that's my personality. But at some point, I had to realize, like, no one else is going to learn leadership if they don't have a chance to step up. So it's about knowing when to step up, but also knowing when to step aside and give other people opportunities and be able to spend that extra minute to train them on what your expectations are and what's effective in leadership. Because if we don't, how do we maintain the organization over time? So I just wanted to, that's all of my kind of viewpoints on where I want to go with the leadership of the CCB, and a lot of that stuff's already in place. So my personal philosophy of leadership is what Robert Greenleaf said, the servant leader. Does anybody know what the servant leadership philosophy is? The servant leadership? So I'm going to try to give it to you in a few words. So the servant leader is committed to service first and then leadership. So they're attracted to work in this field, and I can give you an example. I came to this field from being a disabled vet, and I joined AmeriCorps National Service, which is a domestic version of the Peace Corps, and that gave me a way into the human service industry, but I was attracted to the service component. So I really believe that what I do is service to other people. I'm an employee, but it's really more about service. So service first, and then once you perform the service, then folks who subscribe to this philosophy really aspire to be leaders. I can talk about some leaders. I'm looking around the room, and I don't have great vision without my glasses, but I can see a few people in here that are already coming out as emerging leaders, emerging new leaders in this organization. And they are firmly committed to service first. I mean, they would love to, you know, be able to work for the organization in the future or get some resume building as part of that, but really it's service first for them. And I mean, that's how I live my life. So I just wanted to talk about really the three characteristics that I feel are more important in the servant leadership philosophies. So the first one is valuing diverse opinions. You guys are also very good at this. You have a vast amount of diverse opinions just in this one room. And I'm sure you have a vast amount of opinions on me, but that's okay. I may have the same opinions about you. You don't know. So on that note, I think that, you know, you do a really good job about bringing diverse opinions to the table, and you're very patient in hearing what everyone has to say, and that's not present in most organizations that I've worked for in the last 20 years. There tends to be like either a might makes right philosophy, like I'm the CEO and we're going to do things my way kind of thing, you know, or a trickle down, and I don't believe that that is an effective way to even make a nonprofit great. I mean, it's a partnership with every single person. So sure, I report to the board, but the board reports to you. And ultimately, I report to you. So that's, I mean, that's just how it is at any organization, and definitely how it is at an association. So the next thing is creating a culture of trust. And I think that there is only one way for me to create a culture of trust is to walk the walk and talk the talk. So say what I'm going to do and do what I say. So if you feel that that's not happening, feel free to call me on that. I'm very open to people calling me on things. So if you feel like I'm not doing what I said I was going to do, definitely make your voice heard, and I will listen to you and attempt to make it better. So the third and the last thing, and I think I've already talked about this a little bit, is developing other leaders. Developing other leaders. So, you know, not just the younger generation, but the more inexperienced people. So I'm going to talk about board of directors for a second. So in most organizations that I consult for or have worked at, fully developed board of directors have a mentorship program. So when a new board member comes on or gets recruited and you guys get elected, so it's a little different than the traditional nonprofit. But in most situations, there's a mentorship program. So you have someone who's been on the board for a long period of time who meets and accepts the new board member and kind of guides them in how the board works and what the vision is and where you're going. And throughout that process, that new board member or the new membership person who comes in, I'm thinking Vivian, and I'll see you in this room, but the new member comes in, they're going to need an orientation and they're going to need some guidance over time. So that's really goes to the sustainability of things. I think I see someone with a hand up. Do you have a question, or are you looking for wait staff? Okay. Wait staff, can you? There's a guy back there in the corner that has a, that had his hand up with the red shirt with the black t-shirt. He needs some assistance. Okay, they're on the way. Okay, so that's the second part of tonight's presentation. So the third part is really board leadership. And I believe that the first thing, the most important thing for board members to do is act as positive role models for everyone at the organization they represent and treat people with respect and dignity at all times and all situations, regardless of individual choices or personalities. I think that's really important. But I think, you know, it's, they also need to be committed. Time, expertise, integrity, compassion. And I think that you have that present with your current board members, and it's kind of present across the entire organization. And I just got into this discussion at the publications committee about volunteer hours again. So there's so many good people at this organization who don't want to report one volunteer hour more than what they put in. But what really happens with that is that you're underreporting anyway because you don't want to pat yourself on the back. So when I think about someone who underreports their volunteer hours, I think of Judy Wilkinson, who on the average week probably puts in more than 50, 60 volunteer hours, but claims that she puts in 30, right? So it's one of those things. So, and I think that when we really, one of the things that I like to torture my staff with at other organizations where I've worked at is I love to get to know people so I can find out what their comfort zones are, and then I challenge them to come out of their comfort zones, because that's a really effective way to get people to be developed. And I'm looking at Rangin Rawash back in the back that used to report to me at my last job. So, but getting people out of their comfort zone. So I'll use Rangin as an example. Bringing her on as a job developer, training and mentoring her, and now she's a program supervisor. Right? So fresh out of college, more or less when she came to us, now she supervises other people and manages an entire program. Less than a year. But it was identifying her comfort zone and making her come out of it. So I'm just going to close by saying, you know, as we move forward, the only way to really have that self-renewing organization is for everybody to be committed to it. Like, not all aspects of it, but committed to the survival and the positive impact that we can have as a whole. So we need to have committed, flexible leadership. So as you go forward tonight and vote on who you want as new board members, just kind of keep in mind what I've said tonight. And I know you'll make the right choices. I don't know who's running. And I don't know really anyone at the organization very well. So I have no skin in this game, but I just wanted you some food for thought things for a later meeting. Does anyone have any questions or anything? Or you just want to get back to eating? You have a comment? Okay.
I was just going to say, this is Rob, and I was just going to say that, you know, for a lot of us, we have been in this organization for many, many years, and we really want to see this organization survive and do well, you know. So I think in that sense, some of the new perspectives that you're bringing, you know, we have to kind of go along for the ride a little bit too, and just you know, try to embrace the philosophy in terms of these volunteer hours. It's all so new, and it is hard to think about these hours as volunteer. It's almost like it's just our nature to do you know, we've been doing it for so long, but we'll get with the program.
Does anybody else have anything to say before I sit down? No? Okay, doesn't look like. Oh, there's one comment over here, Christy. The answer is 47.
So how about telling us what constitutes volunteer hours and how we can add those up and how we can talk to our chapter members so that we can get a correct count of those volunteer hours?
Okay, so the thing that I love and hate about your organization, there's so many analytical thinkers here, and we tend to overcomplicate things. So I'm going to say that as simply as I can. A volunteer hour on behalf of the organization is anything that you do on behalf of the organization. So that doesn't include outside blind service organizations. They're going to track your hours for their thing. Anything that you do on behalf of a chapter, on behalf of a committee, on behalf of an affiliate that's not a separate 501c3. So I was talking to, and I don't maybe see her here. I just came from the publications committee, and I was talking to Donna Sanchez, who asked me if she should count her volunteer hours that she puts in as a treasurer for the CCLV. And I was like, yes, you do. So she now is tracking her treasurer hours for the CCLV, her committee hours for the publications committee, and her chapter hours for her individual chapter. So I've kind of given up on deadlines to receive things. I just need to have things on a monthly basis as far as the volunteer hours on a monthly calendar basis that makes sense to the individual chapter or affiliate. So did I answer your question or no? Okay. You're not talking into a mic. You're not talking into a mic. No.
Attend the convention is volunteer hours.
Yeah, so we track the convention separately. So anything that you do at the convention is convention volunteer hours, even if it's part of your individual committee meetings. Yeah, just attending. I mean, just coming here, you're a volunteer in support of the CCB. Anyone else? Hang on, I see someone in the back. I'll be back to you, Charlene. This room is bigger than it looks.
Thank you, Paul. Welcome to the Blind Biz, Paul Shane. This is Carl. And I want to just react to what Paul said about his philosophy and point out a few things that I heard this afternoon that I really liked. Paul, you talked about a culture of trust. And I think that's very, very important. And a part of the trust is what I refer to as vulnerable trust, that it's okay to say, you've made mistakes. It's okay to say I'm sorry. And Vita worked at AFB. She's probably heard me say 100 times, I made a mistake. This wasn't done very well. I apologize, whatever. And I want to compliment Judy when she was giving her report today. It's okay to say we've made mistakes. We have to learn from the mistakes, but it's okay to say it. The other thing you said, Paul, is about conflict and differing opinions. And I think it was Artis that said today that one of the things she likes about CCB is that it's a group of people that can get together and have differing opinions and still like each other. And what I refer to that is ideological conflict. I think it's ideological conflict is good for an organization. What you have to wipe away is the personal conflict, which often comes from ideological conflict. But ideological conflict is very, very good. And then the final thing I'd say is I liked some of the comments today about embracing change. And, you know, I give this organization a lot of credit. Very successful on the mutton strut. Maybe the last year was the most successful. But, you know, let's try something different. Let's move on. Let's try to find something new that might be exciting for us and might bring us all together and make us money. And I think that's a very, very good trait. So I'm really hearing a lot of really good things from you, Paul, and a lot of good things from the leadership of this organization.
Thank you. Okay, so I just have Charlene. Is there anyone else that needs to speak? Okay, Charlene.
I think that one of the things that many people don't know is how important recording of volunteer hours really is. There's actually a federal dollar amount set to that, and in some cases, when you write a grant, you can use your volunteer hours to use as matching funds, because you have those hours and it would count as money. Also, it shows an interest in the organization to people looking at the organization from the outside. We show that there's enough interest, that we have this many hours and this number of people, and it looks good when people look at it. And we need the statistics, because that's how you get your funding, that's how you get your grants, is by presenting the statistics that show that you are a viable and a good organization.
I'm getting a sense that certain people speak a lot at the CCB as I walk over to Vita. There you are.
Hello, Paul. Please correct me if I'm wrong. This convention, all of the hours here are volunteer hours. That means for you, for everyone in your chapter who's here, okay, maybe not the time you went to the workout room, but all the meals, because in our meals we have learned, we have educated, all of the sessions we have gone to, any time you spent talking about CCB, that you walked up to Judy and gave her a suggestion, all volunteer time. Is that correct, Paul?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
So last year there was over 11,000 volunteer hours attached to the convention, and there's more people here this year, so it'll give you an idea of what kind of impact that has for us. Okay, last call. Anyone else? Okay, Judy.
Thank you, Paul. Let's give Paul a hand.
And you'll be hearing Paul's official report to the convention tomorrow afternoon, the last item on the agenda tomorrow afternoon. So enjoy the rest of your dinner. We'll see you at the second session. Should be very exciting. Thank you, and see you in a few minutes.